So welcome to the Libraries Computing and Technology University Libraries Colloquial Series. It's my privilege to introduce our speaker today, Jacqueline Lohman. Jackie and I share a love of Michigan's agricultural history, and she has been so supportive of the MSU Library's efforts to preserve historical documents that record that history. So let me give you a brief biographical overview of Jackie before she begins. Jackie is currently a doctoral candidate in the Mass Media PhD program at Michigan State University. Her studies have taken a rather circuitous route. She was away from academia for approximately 15 years, working, among other things, as a professional writer and editor. When she returned to school, she obtained degrees in classics and in ancient Near Eastern languages and civilizations. A serious illness caused her to reevaluate her life, and she decided to pursue her passion. For many years, she had what she thought were three distinct research interests. One was rural life. Another was the way that people define their identities, realize their potential, find meaning in their lives, and create and understand community. The third was the supposedly rigid concepts of gender, race, class, age, disability, etc., and how people continually transcend these barriers. As she did more research, she realized that these interests were not discrete at all, but that they converge and interrelated in unique and exciting ways. She found that she could explore all of these areas simultaneously. Jackie had always worked with documents and taken an historical approach. Delving into MSU Library's collection of old agricultural newspapers, she discovered the Grange Visitor, the official newspaper of the Michigan State Grange that was published from 1875 through 1896. She began to read this paper and grew more and more excited. Here was an organization that had advocated equality for women from its inception in the mid-19th century, whose goal was to help people attain their highest potential, that valued people regardless of gender, age, class, etc., whose members created and served community and were deeply empowered. As she read, she wondered what had happened to such a revolutionary, visionary organization. At that time, Jackie happened to be doing an independent study with Brenda Wrigley, MSU Assistant Professor of Public Relations, who encouraged her to get out there and talk with those Grange people. Jackie thought, I can't do that. But the Grange members with whom she began to interact would not accept that. They just responded, you can do it. Jackie discovered that she could indeed do it. And that revelation completely changed her research, of which you are about to hear. Please join me in welcoming Jackie Lohman.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. I'm so glad that you are all here. Today I'm going to share a little of my research on the Grange with you. When trying to figure out what to include and how to sequence it, I tried to be logical. However, I am not a very logical person, so please bear with me. I plan to touch upon some of the things that I would want to know if someone else were talking and hope that they will be of interest to you as well. In case you are a bit shaky on Grange history or just need a refresher, I will start by giving you some background on this. And I feel a little embarrassed about this because there are so many Grange people here that could do this much better than I, but hopefully they will bear with me as well. The Order of the Patrons of Husbandry, more familiarly known as the Grange, arose from rural conditions during the post-Civil War Depression. In 1866, Oliver Hudson Kelly, originally from Boston and a sometime Minnesota farmer, was commissioned by President Andrew Johnson to travel throughout the South and survey conditions among the farmers there. Although Kelly was obviously a Northerner, he found that his membership in the Masons, an organization whose numbers were on the ascendance, earned him ready access and acceptance among Southern farmers. He was struck by the rural people's social, economic, educational, legal, and political isolation. Further travel and experience convinced him that these conditions were not regional, but had parallels throughout rural America, North and Midwest, as well as the developing West, in addition to the South. This was a period in which the embryos of unions were starting to develop to advance the interests of urban labor. Kelly envisioned a sort of rural counterpart to these, a fraternal organization that would bring farmers together in order to learn from one another, socialize, cooperate economically, find their voices, become a legal and legislative force, and assert the inherent godliness and purity of a rural way of life that too often was denigrated by urban people and was losing its younger generations to the attractions of the city. With the encouragement of such trusted advisors as Carolyn Hall, Kelly's niece and one-time secretary, Aaron B. Grosh, first chaplain of the National Grange, and Anson Bartlett, an Ohio dairy farmer who was the first overseer of the National Grange, Kelly included a truly revolutionary idea in his conception. Women were to be admitted to the Grange as full and equal members. Up to this time, most male-dominated organizations may have tolerated a female presence, but it was in a tangential, auxiliary role. The Grange was one of the first organizations in the United States to accord women anything approximating equality. The Grange began to make inroads into Michigan in 1871. After a faltering start, and as rural economic distress increased, the Grange began to spread in 1872. The Michigan State Grange held its first session in Kalamazoo in April 1873, the date usually accepted as the real start of the Michigan Grange. Membership of the Grange as a whole reflected the country's population. It arose as an organization based in an agricultural way of life. As the nation advanced into the 20th century and its demographics shifted, the Grange's membership base began to erode. Through the middle of the 20th century, the Grange experienced periodic surges in membership by offering tangible benefits, such as health insurance, to those who would join. A large portion of those who joined for such a purpose were not interested in other aspects of the Grange, many of which are intangible. Thus, when they had a chance to obtain the incentive in some other way, without Grange mediation, they often terminated their membership. The Grange began to lose members. People were leaving at a much more rapid rate than they were joining. As early as the 1960s, the National Grange commissioned a study that concluded that the Grange had to make changes or it was not likely to see the turn of the century. However, no substantive action was taken. Although the Grange did still exist at the end of the 1990s, it was much smaller than its former self, with declining membership and an identity crisis, both publicly and internally. Although the Grange continued to be interested in agriculture, it could no longer be tied exclusively to farmers and remain viable. Technology has reduced the numbers of those directly involved in production agriculture to only a small percentage of the population. Urban and suburban sprawl has swallowed farmland. Some once rural Grange halls now stand in urban environments. Even those Granges that continue to exist in rural areas are apt to have few farmers as members. But the Grange has always been about more than farming. Besides at least a general belief in the importance of agriculture, the other mainstay of Grange life is involvement in community service. A difficulty was that the Grange and its surrounding communities had often lost touch with one another. Many outside the Grange did not know what it was. Some had never heard of it. Others thought of it as an historical entity only, with no current existence. Even many of those from communities in which Granges are located tended to associate the Grange with only a singular activity, not the range of functions that many current Granges fulfill. The National Grange decided on a bold move. From its inception, the Grange had considered itself a grassroots organization. In theory, at least, power originated with individual Grangers at the local level, passed through to county Granges, then on to the state, and finally to the national organization. Once again, it looked to its membership for answers. It appointed an advisory committee of Grange members who represented a number of states. After studying the problem and conferring, the committee recommended that the National Grange try an Action Grange program. Local Granges would be invited to apply for this pilot project. They had to explain why they wished to take part, pay a fee, commit to attend several seminars run by a Grange-employed facilitator, fill out quarterly progress reports. In exchange, Action Granges would be given broad discretionary powers to make changes in their granges. The National Grange specified only a few features that must be retained. Action Granges were free to experiment with everything else as they sought to uncover ways to attract more members. This was to be a pilot project lasting 3 years. At the end of that time, the National Grange was to sort out what worked, what did not, and where they should go from there. In essence, these Granges were being asked to derive a solution for the Grange, to reverse a downward spiral of many decades in a 3-year span, a daunting task. Still, a number of Granges did apply and were accepted. There were 4 in Michigan, and now we've gone into Action Grange 2, and some other Granges in Michigan have applied for that, so it's been successful. The Grange is undergoing nothing less than a struggle over its identity, its heart and soul. What is it ultimately that makes the Grange the Grange? This is an organization steeped in tradition. What do its members need to change and what should be retained? Some traditionalists maintain that nothing must be changed. Others point to their thinning ranks and say that they were not meant to be living history museums. They argue that change is inevitable and that they must adapt to the times in order to remain relevant. They contend that this is the most effective way to fulfill their mission of service to the community and agriculture and the environment. And there are many Granges in Michigan that aren't technically Action Granges, but they're active Granges and are very adaptable to their community. Now that's the Cliff Notes version of the history of the Grange in about 10 minutes. It doesn't do the Grange justice, it doesn't begin to. But if I've piqued your interest, I can give you references to a number of good books that go into it in greater detail. Now I'd like to tell you what led me to the Grange. And some of this is going to be a little overlap in what Anita already said, but now that you've got that background, you're maybe wondering what led me to this research. You've already heard about my interests and that I always dealt with nice, safe, dusty volumes. But in the spring of 2001, while I was deeply immersed in classes for my graduate program, I was casting about for a project for a class the following fall. I started doing searches through MSU's online card catalog, trying to narrow my focus to a particular agricultural newspaper. I discovered that MSU has an unparalleled collection of old Grange newspapers, in particular, the Grange Visitor, the official newspaper of the Michigan State Grange from 1875 through 1896. MSU has almost the complete run of this paper. It has about 2 years, I think, that are missing, but just a fabulous array of them. I thought that something that to me seemed so priceless would be showcased and housed in special collections, but was surprised to learn that it was kept in remote storage. The issues were apparently bound 1 or 2 years together. I requested a few volumes. When I went to retrieve the volumes, I felt a combination of elation and alarm. I was elated to have such a superb window into the past, but I was alarmed at the condition of the volumes. All of the issues were now more than 100 years old. Although some of the paper for select issues may have had a rag cloth base, much of the paper was real newsprint, thus from wood pulp with a highly acidic content. In addition, when the newspapers had been sent to subscribers, they had been folded. Although they were open in the volumes, the sharp creases from long ago had taken a toll. The leather bindings of the volumes themselves were dropping apart. Many of the pages inside were clearly fragile, discolored, and turning to dust. I was not sure how to proceed. I didn't want to worsen the paper's condition. On the other hand, just letting them quietly molder did not seem like a good solution. I hope that perhaps by working with these documents and disseminating information about them, I might be a force for their appreciation and preservation. So I contacted Jeannie Drews, the library's head of preservation and access, asking for guidance on how to handle the papers. When I wrote, I was very apologetic, thinking that this is not exactly a mainstream modern issue. So I said that I realized that old agricultural papers might not seem important in the face of other pressing library needs, but that I hated to see them deteriorating without preserving their priceless legacy. I got a wonderful email back. I was so relieved. It was very supportive, very enthusiastic, saying that the newspapers mattered a great deal to the library and that she and Anita Ezzo were in the process of writing a grant proposal for funds that would ensure their preservation. She asked if I would like to write a letter of support. I couldn't wait to do that. And now I'm going to digress for a minute and say that this was the beginning of what I believe has been a very fruitful collaboration between those ladies and me. I've learned about their agricultural and rural life in Michigan 1820 to 1945 project, in which they are identifying, preserving state and local published literature relating to agricultural and rural life in America between 1820 and 1945. For me, it was exciting because much of this material is Grange literature. I've tried to help identify sources for the materials and rank them in order of importance. I've been delighted to have helped promote increased relationships between MSU and the Grange as the Grange looks for fitting repositories for some of its priceless records. And MSU has advised how the Grange can better preserve those records and materials that it does keep. I'm very excited by the potential not only to microfilm the old Grange and agricultural materials, thus preserving them for posterity, but also to digitize them so that they can put on CDs, DVDs, or online and can be accessed by virtually anyone, anytime, anywhere. It's a pleasure to see MSU taking the lead in recognizing and honoring the rich agricultural heritage that is a part of us all. And I would like Jeannie Drews and Anita Ezzo, who I'm sure are here. Well, I see Jeannie. Anita is here. I'd like you guys please to stand up. Also, Jane Arnold, if she's in here, because she's my person that asked me to do this speech. So I'd just like them to stand up so that everyone can give them a round of applause, because they have done a super, super job. So thank you all so very, very much. So, okay, enough digression on that. Back to the Grange visitor. And by the way, I beat on Anita, and she let me bring a Grange visitor. Actually, yes, please. This is one of the issues. Actually, it's probably a couple of years' worth. They are just priceless, so when I'm through up here banging your ear, we'll have some questions and also interaction, and I would highly recommend that you look at this. It's just marvelous. The ads alone are just splendid and wonderful window of opportunity onto a bygone era. So, anyway, as I read this paper, I grew more and more excited about this entity called the Grange. As Anita said, you know, an organization that advocated equality for women from its inception in the mid-19th century, whose goal was to help people attain their highest potential, valued people regardless of age, gender, class, race, whatever, whose members created and served community and were deeply empowered. And as I read, I wondered what happened to them, because I didn't know. And at this point, I was doing an independent study on ethnography with Brenda Wrigley, Assistant Professor of Public Relations, MSU. I, the person who existed for dusty old books, was supposed to go out and talk with people. Initially, I felt that I didn't have any idea with whom to talk or how to go about it. And then I realized that this was the perfect opportunity to try to learn whether there was a contemporary Grange, and if so, to discover more about it. I did an online search, and that led me to the National Grange website, which was an adequate product, I would say. It had links for all 37 states and the District of Columbia that have state Grange organizations. Some of the links lead to sophisticated state Grange web pages, and others lead to bare bones outline, which isn't always accurate, listing the names and addresses of a state Grange's officers, email contacts, etc. The Michigan State Grange had one of the latter websites at that time that had been constructed for it by the National Grange. As another aside, the Michigan State Grange now has a greatly improved website. It's very, very nice. And I'm sure when we're through with this, Jeff Swainston, who is the head of the State Grange, would be glad to give you the URL for the Michigan State Grange. It's very, very nice. So anyway, I emailed the state office briefly describing my position in research and asked if there were any Granges in my area. I live in Charlotte in Eaton County. And if there would be any members who would be willing to talk with me about the Grange. Peggy Johnston, Secretary of the Michigan State Grange, responded promptly, suggesting that I contact Beulah and Roland Winter of Marshall, Michigan. Both have been involved with the Grange on the local, county, state, and national levels for decades and remain active. I won't even begin to tell you all the things they have done for the Grange on all these levels because we would be here all night, so I'm going to just... despite their hectic schedules, they made an appointment for me to see them soon. And these people are busy people, so it was really amazing that they found that time. I planned that my initial meeting with them would last about a half an hour. 4 hours later, I was still sitting, talking with the Winters. That was my first indication, which has continually been confirmed since then, that Grange people love to talk. And I will say that it's always the Grange people, it's not me. It's always them that just keep me there, you know, I would otherwise be gone. But I told the Winters that I was looking for a person whose life story would be compelling and also serve as an apt introduction to the Grange. I had to write this paper and I wanted it to be about one person, but I wanted it to also be a door to the Grange. And I was going to write one paper and that was going to be done with the Grange. They told me about Helen Peck, the matriarch of Fredonia Grange. The Winters belong to Home Grange, and then there's also another Grange, Fredonia Grange in Calhoun County. Once I heard about her, I knew that I had an ideal topic. Researching Helen Peck brought me into contact with many more remarkable people, not least of whom was the subject herself. I'd like to tell you about her. For the most part, these are not my words and perspectives, but those of Helen Peck and the other people whom I interviewed about her. This is a summary of a paper that I delivered at the Rural Women's Studies Association Triennial Conference that was held in Las Cruces, New Mexico in February 2003. The paper, I had to really scrunch to get a paper of about 30 words, and now my presentation was only supposed to be about 15 minutes long, so it's just going to give you a little bit of an outline of Helen Peck. A lot of it I had to leave out, but it'll give you some idea of this lady. The name of my paper and my talk then was called You Can Do It, You Can Do It, Helen Peck, A Life of Work, Leadership, and Encouragement in the Grange. Helen Peck was born in Eckford, Michigan, a village now considered part of Marshall, Michigan, in 1903, which, as she says, makes me a few years old. Her father was a tenant farmer. He would rent a farm by sharing a portion of the crops that he produced with the farm's owner. During Helen's youth, farmers with modest means on small farms still did all of their own farm work by hand and by horse. They were not generally able to utilize contemporary farm machinery or employ hired help, and so the amount of acreage that they could cultivate was limited. As Helen's brothers grew older and were able to help her father, the latter, looking to improve his family's prospects, moved them to a larger farm near Albion, Michigan. It was there that Helen served as president of the 4-H in 1923, the first chapter organized in the county. Later that same year, Helen married her first husband, Emil A. Tech. They moved to and worked a tenant farm in Lee Township in the north central portion of Calhoun County, near the city of Marshall. By 1933, she had seven children in 9 years, she emphasizes. By this time, they were in the Depression. Helen says that people that did not live through that time cannot imagine what it was like. Her husband worked hard and was good at what he did, so they always had enough to eat, a comfortable home, and clothes to wear. But they had no money. Although they loved agriculture and rural life, Helen and her husband thought that there must be a way for country people to have a better life. That was when, in 1936, Helen and her husband joined the Grange. The next year, in 1937, Helen became involved through the Grange with the Calhoun County Fair. Since that time, Helen has never missed attending the fair. When World War II started, times were still hard, but there were more economic opportunities. Helen's husband got a job at Eaton Manufacturing making automobile parts. Since Helen's children were no longer tiny, she too got a job. She worked in Battle Creek packing rations at a post-cereal plant that had been converted for the war effort to produce provisions for the troops overseas. Since the techs were no longer working their tenant farm full-time, when their lease came up for renewal, the owner said that they must make a choice, farm full-time or leave. Unable to give up the economic benefits of factory work, the techs reluctantly left the farm. However, by careful saving, they were able to accumulate enough money to buy their own farm in Eckford Township in 1942. But just when it seemed that life was improving and the family could lead the rural life of their dreams, tragedy struck. Helen's husband was killed in 1947. Unable to keep the farm as a single parent, she was forced to sell and move to Marshall. This was a difficult time for a widow with seven children. Helen struggled to keep the family together, at one point working for Beryl Henry, the Calhoun County Extension agent. All through the years, Helen maintained her Grange membership. Eventually, she met a man from another Grange, Vern Peck, and they began to keep company. She married Vern in 1949 and moved back to a farm to live with him and his bachelor brother, Leon. Helen stayed on that farm into the 1990s, when she, Vern, and Leon were also all in their 90s. Then Vern died. Leon's death followed about a year later. Helen was unable to maintain the 17-room brick farmhouse and the surrounding farm acreage. So she sold the farm, using some of the profits to help her daughter Mary and son-in-law Reuben build an apartment onto their Marshall home so that Helen could live with them while allowing everyone to preserve independence and privacy. Although Helen was no longer able to participate much physically in her many community interests and projects, she continued to support them financially with contributions from the proceeds from the farm sale. Helen feels that she and the Grange were and are a perfect fit. Immediately after she joined Partello Grange in 1936, she took charge of the kitchen. In those days, the Granges put on exhibits at the county fairs. And many of them still do this. During the first year of Helen's membership, Partello Grange's master wanted a suitable display for the Grange exhibit. As Helen tells it, this was right up my alley. She went home, made an elaborate motif of crepe paper, and got the job. Helen became very involved with the Grange very quickly. If there was something that needed doing, she did it. Both Helen and other interviewees candidly admit that this was sometimes difficult for Helen's children. Although they were never neglected, the children knew that at times, at least, the Grange took precedence in Helen's thoughts, energies, and efforts. But Helen believes that her Grange involvement was ultimately good for all of them as well, even for those who have no current Grange connections. She claims proudly that although her children may not have understood at the time, they are now the same types of people. Strong people, doers, take charge folks. When Helen married Vern and moved to the Peck family farm, she changed her Grange membership to Fredonia Grange, the Grange closest to her new home, the one to which Vern and Leon belonged. Through the years, she has held a number of positions in the Grange, among them Master of Fredonia Grange, Matron of the Junior or Children's Grange, and at various times, Lecturer, Treasurer, and Chaplain of the Pomona or County Grange. Helen also served as Michigan State Grange Women's Activities Director, stepping down when her mother's health failed and she wanted to spend more time with her. Helen's valedictory report as Michigan State Grange Women's Activities Director provides an eloquent testament of her feeling for and belief in the Grange. I have enjoyed the benefits of Grange membership for over 30 years. I believe the Grange to be the finest rural organization we have in America today. I believe in our ritualism, in which we dramatize the beauty of rural life and stress the importance of the family, the home, and the community to our nation and mankind. Brotherhood is promoted, understanding is created, education is fostered, for we learn as we participate. The Grange is a great developer of the individual. It offers us many opportunities to step into positions of leadership and service. We have the opportunity to develop our talents, our ability as speakers, to broaden our outlook by coming in contact with members from other areas and backgrounds. It offers social activity for all ages and interests. It provides fellowship and enjoyment for the whole family. It is a self-help force for carrying out projects for the betterment of communities. It has legislative force and it has influence at all levels of government. In her interview, Helen Peck shared what she believes the Grange has done for her, enabling her to have such a positive impact on other people. As an adolescent, Helen had wanted more than anything to go to high school. But her family was very poor, so there was no way that her father could afford to send her to high school in town. She always felt very inferior and secretly grieved. When she joined the Grange, she found it a perfect fit and began to feel valued and worthwhile. She became the Women's Activities Director for Fredonia Grange, then for the State Grange. When she held that office, she had to do a great deal of correspondence. In time, she noticed that her writing was more lucid and had fewer grammatical errors and misspellings than most that she received, as she said, from many more educated people. At that point, she says, I stopped feeling sorry for myself. She finally lost her feeling of inadequacy. She credits the Grange with making this possible. Music plays an important part in the Grange. Every meeting incorporates music to some degree. Helen's musical talents made an important contribution to the Grange for many years. Helen came from a musical family. Her father was a country fiddler. When Helen's parents married, her grandmother gave her parents a pump organ as a wedding gift. Neither of Helen's parents was able to take music lessons. Her father wanted something more for Helen. When Helen was a very young child, still living in Eckford, a local music teacher would take the train out from Marshall once a week to teach a group of children that included her. As Helen's skill grew, her father traded the organ for a piano. When the family moved to Albion, Helen took lessons from a woman who taught music at Albion College. Her father also enrolled her in a music correspondence course. Lessons consisted of a history of each piece, exercises to work through, drills on chords, etc. The lessons grew increasingly complex. Although Helen remarks ruefully that she never did complete the course, it had levels from first grade through the end of high school. She learned enough that she was able to teach music in three country schools as an adult. She also gave private lessons in her home for many years. Helen also played for the Grange at local, county, and state levels. Memories of Helen's playing at Grange functions were among other interviewees' most vivid. Helen Hazen, a longtime friend, shared such a memory, which clearly evoked strong emotion. She made me feel real good. She has tachycardia, and her heart will go real fast. Doesn't tell anybody much of anything. And I'm an XRN, and we were at a Grange meeting, and she was playing the piano, and she gets up and walks out and goes like this to me. And I follow her out, and she says, my heart's doing that funny thing again. And I said, should I call somebody? Do you want to go to the hospital? What? No. I'll just lay down. Rolled up a couple of coats as a pillow. We had a set of chairs right there in the other room, and she laid down. I paced the floor and debated whether I should do something or just be there. And when she said no, it'll be all right, you just kind of had to believe her. And finally she said, it's getting better now. And she held out her hand, and I took hold of her hand, and she said, you know, you're a comfort. And nobody could have said anything any better. I was a nervous wreck, but you're a comfort. Didn't want to disturb the meeting. Just, it'll be all right in a minute. Just stay here with me and it'll be all right. And it was all right. It was all right. Up into her 80s, or perhaps even into her 90s, Helen continued to play for Fredonia Grange and the Pomona Grange. All of Helen's children play musical instruments. They never had formal lessons, but picked up music on their own with Helen ready to correct them and give them guidance. Through the time of the interview, the family would gather every Thursday afternoon to make music, taking turns as host. Helen always presided, sometimes playing the piano in accompaniment. And we have a picture up here, I think, of Helen Peck playing the piano at Fredonia Grange when she was probably up into her 90s. Just really an extraordinary thing to do. All the Grange interviewees emphasized that the Grange is like a family. Despite the fraternal unity, one of its strengths has been and is that every voice has a chance to be heard. People in the Grange can agree to disagree, and they do. There can sometimes be murmurs of discontent as well. Committed Grange members attempt to live by its principles, but they are human, and discord can arise, such as when some people fill strong leadership roles. Helen Hazen addresses such an instance. Somebody said, whatever Vern and Helen wanted got done. Well, it needed to be done. Somebody had to come up with the ideas. And Helen was good at it, and she was good as state women's activities director. Helen Hazen believes that one of Helen Peck's most important legacies is that of encourager. Well, she convinced me that I could do things that I never thought that I could do. You know, I can't do that. I can't do that. Oh, yes, you can. You can be junior leader. You can do it. And working with her at the B.E. Henry and for the fair, one year she said, I've had enough of this. You're going to do it. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, oh, yeah, I'm done. And so if anybody had ever told me years ago that I was in charge of the cooking for that booth, I'd have told them they were crazy. You know, you can do it. You can do it. And I did it. And now it's somebody else's turn. And she's done that to other people too, you know. You can do it. Encourage you to, I don't know whether you'd say stretch your wings or what, but always, always ready to encourage and help. Several times during the interview, Helen Peck thumbed through the books on her table, trying to find one with the Grange ritual in it, anxious for me to become familiar with it. Traditionally, knowledge of the ritual had been restricted to Grange members. Helen thinks that the secrecy part of the Grange is now ridiculous. She loves the Grange, thinks that the ritual is beautiful, and thinks that it should be shared as widely as possible. She was delighted when the National Master replied to her letter castigating secrecy as outmoded with the words, Dear Sister Peck, as my grandchildren would say, you are right on. Helen believes that he shares her opinions, but that he must be careful because he serves all Grangers, among them those who are bound to tradition. She says that it was Vern and her influence that has encouraged Fredonia Grange to bend the rules. When they have guests, they allow them to come right in. They do not have to bother with a secret password to the gatekeeper, and they are allowed to observe everything, including the ritual. They do not use the password at every meeting. Helen says that she is 98 years young and that she thinks that one must change to keep up with this century. She says that she imagines that there may have been a purpose for the secrecy back when the Grange was first organized in the 1860s, 1870s, and 1880s, but that now it is a century out of date. Helen is a visionary, progressive, forward-looking woman. She is passionately committed to the Grange's changing and continuing to be relevant for the 21st century. She believes that the Grange must jettison its secret aspects or it will die. She is very excited that Fredonia Grange is one of the National Action Granges, charged with trying new things so that the Grange can adapt and prosper. Helen says with pride that Fredonia Grange has 141 members, the most in the state. She says that their meetings are always filled, while more traditional Granges are lucky if they get all their officers to attend. She spoke several times of more conservative members in a gently reproving way. Helen sees them as traditionalists, wedded to a past that is no longer viable or practical. She believes that Granges that are not progressive, are not willing to adapt and change, deserve to die. Helen Hazen offers an apt crystallization of Helen Peck's vision and life. The Grange is changing, and she has advocated change for some time because we're losing members.
And she said some of this stuff. Of course the Grange was a secret organization. It started as a secret organization, but that was back after the Civil War when the railroads were just gypping the farmers. The farmers couldn't ship their produce, they couldn't make a living at it, and you had to have a secret. But she said, we don't need that anymore. We don't need passwords. What do we need passwords for? So even though she's that age, she's progressive. She's, let's get on with it. Let's bring it up to today, not 100 years ago. That's what kind of a woman she is and has been all her life. Tremendous lady. And now I have a sad epilogue. I've been talking about Helen Peck in the present because she is so vivid. But within a week of my interview with her in November 2001, Helen Peck was rushed to the hospital critically ill. No one expected her to live, so her family and friends gathered around her to say what they thought would be their last goodbyes. But Helen had no intention of giving up if there were any alternatives. Despite her advanced age and frail physical condition, she asked the doctors to try surgery. They did so, removing a blockage from Helen's colon, and incredibly, she survived. A biopsy revealed that Helen had cancer of the bowel, and further tests indicated that it had spread to her liver, was rapidly advancing throughout her body. Helen was sent to a nursing home to recuperate from the surgery. She remained comfortable, alert, and eager to receive visitors, share her love with them, and talk about the Grange. Helen's physical body died on December 29th, 2001. But in many ways, Helen Peck's presence will continue. Her legacy will live. She has inspired generations to love the Grange, to reach out to others, to help everyone that they can, to do whatever needs to be done. As long as one person remains who upholds and enacts these principles, be that person called a Granger or not, Helen's spirit will endure and triumph. I have some items out here pertaining to Helen Peck, things that her family has lent me, and my only sorrow in coming to do this today is that now they're going to take these items back from me, and I've been nurturing them for many months. There's a picture of Helen when she was a baby, a picture of Helen, her first husband Emil, and her seven children when they were all young, a Christmas photo of Helen and her seven children when they're a little older, in their 60s and 70s, a quilt block from the last quilt that Helen ever made when she was 97 and 98, just awesome. And I also have what I think are the best show and tell items of all. Two of Helen's daughters came and I would like them to stand up. I have Mary LaFountain and Virginia Van Sickle, the next to the youngest and youngest, her baby. So, and as Helen said, they are all remarkable, all her children. They are strong people, exceptional people, and they have helped me a tremendous amount. I can't thank them enough. As you can imagine, once I got to know Helen and her family and friends, I was hooked. The one small paper has turned into several papers, talks, and a dissertation. I have met some truly remarkable people, and I have learned to do things that I never dreamed I could. Some of the skills may not seem surprising. I have conducted focus groups, communication audits, made presentations, facilitated networking, brainstorming, goal setting, blah, blah, blah. But some of the other skills that I have acquired because of the Grange, while perhaps no less useful, may seem less obvious. With the Grange, one is never a mere observer, but gets sucked into being a participant. So I have been involved in various food events, such as the food booth at the Calhoun County Fair and pancake brunches. I now know vastly more than I did before about preparing food for and feeding hundreds of people at a time. These people are incredible cooks, I want to tell you, and I'll do a little plug here. They have some copies of the National Grange cookbook here. I would very much encourage you to look at it. It's just a fabulous, fabulous book. We have one in our house, and I can't say enough good stuff about that. And I think there's even some recipes. I think there's something from Beulah Winter in it, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah. I've learned a great deal about small-town communities and community service. And best of all, I have met some truly extraordinary people. People who are willing to embrace an outsider, listen to her ideas, help her with her research, open their homes to me, put up with me. I think the winners have sort of kind of adopted me. I can never thank them enough, but the least I can do is acknowledge them. And some of them are here today, so I'd like to introduce them. And I'm going to not give all the titles that some of these people have, because I know I'd leave something out, and I don't want to do that. So please, I hope you know that you won't be offended if I just give a little, you know. The first people I have to introduce are Beulah and Roland Winter, my first people that I met from the Grange. They've been involved at the Grange in every level. I don't know what titles to give. They're the Grange historians. Roland's on the executive committee of the State Grange. Beulah is
deaf awareness.
Roland is the head of Home Grange. Beulah is the secretary. As I said, I could go on and on, but they are just extraordinary folks. And I'd like you to keep standing up if you can. Is that okay? Can you hang in there? Just fabulous folks. Let's see. We've also got, you got to stand up, Roland. You got to stay standing up. I've got people here from, I should probably go from the back, because if you stand up, you're going to block off everybody, right? So from the back, I have got the head of the Michigan State Grange, Jeff Swainston. He's the master president of the Michigan State Grange. He's a really nice man, but he owes me a prize that he didn't bring with him today. So I said that I was going to say that he's not always completely truthful. Chris and Connie Johnston, who are youth directors of the State Grange, and also assistant steward and lady assistant steward. I'm probably leaving stuff out. I'm sorry if I do. Let's see. Who else have we got? We have Joan Hellman. Am I missing anybody else back there? I don't think so. Joan Hellman from Pittsfield Union Grange in Ann Arbor. So yes, there are urban granges. You have to stay standing up. I made all these people go through this. So she is a teacher at U of M. I shouldn't say that. Maybe the ceiling will fall down. But and she is in a grange that used to be out in the middle of nowhere and now is in this really choice urban spot. Sue Withers, who is the head of Georgetown Grange, which is over by Grand Rapids. It's very easy to get lost going to see Sue. I've done it. And she's also series for the State Grange. And let's see, Patty Carncross, who has been, a lot of these folks have been in the Grange forever and ever, and some of them are relative newcomers. We have a nice cross-section. Patty is the community service director for the State Grange, and lots of other things too, so I'm sorry if I'm leaving anything out. Oh, I've skipped. Ethel Hazen. You have to get up now. Ethel Hazen, who is the secretary of Fredonia Grange, and he's been involved in all kinds of stuff, and he's involved in the Pomona Grange, as the Winters are. Richard Hazen, all right, I guess I should say Rich Hazen. Rich Hazen, who is the chair, head, whatever, of Fredonia Grange. Have I missed anybody?
Me.
Oh, that's true, you are. She does double duty, that's right, yes. This is, we already met Mary LaFelle, but she is also a member of Fredonia Grange. Mary Houghton, gosh. This is terrible. Mary Houghton behind this camera, who is the director, team leader, I don't know what we're calling her these days, of the community service for Fredonia Grange.
She's also Helen Peck's niece.
Yes, she's Helen Peck's niece. Oh, that's right, I should have introduced you as family too. I'm sorry. See, I'm not very good at this. Have I hit everybody now, I hope? Yes, so great, great, great people. Now, I think, fortunately for you, I think I've run out of air. So a lot of the Grange people, I think, have brought different things pertaining to the Grange at my behest. Actually, I threatened them with death if they didn't do this. And I'm sure they'd like to share some of those things with you. So I will be happy to take questions, and then they can show things. And that's the end of the formal part of my talk. Thank you. Any questions? You have a question? You can. No, you don't have a question.
Jackie, I'm curious if you think that someone could be a part of the Grange and just pay dues and not actually attend meetings. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, it. I mean, the Granges here certainly have, you know, they have associate members who support them financially. And there are members that come to different events, work at like some of the different food events, but don't necessarily go to the meetings. I think if you start going to the meetings, you get sucked in, you know, because it's just, you know, the Grange always says, you know, give us a couple of hours a month, but Grange time is different from regular time. You know, a couple of hours a month can be, you know, weeks and weeks. But I think when people go, and it's just, you go to the Grange meetings and they're just, they have these incredible people, and you just sort of sit there and you listen to people, and you know, like Beulah has done a booklet, a Rural Memories booklet, because each person, when I met them and I said, you know, I wanted to do a paper on an extraordinary person, and we decided that everybody is extraordinary. Each person has these wonderful memories and anecdotes to share, and you wind up going to the meetings because you just don't want to miss anything. You know that something amazing will happen when you're not there, so.
Your degree is in mass communication.
Yes.
How is that wedding with your...
I only have one person here on my committee, so, and he's not a mass media person, so I can... I got involved in it because of the old newspapers. Mm-hmm. And so that was a nice fit, and I started out and it was going to be historical. It was going to be a history of the Grange. And the Winners are very involved in the history aspect of it. So they were a very logical connection. But then I met them and I thought, you know, these people are just amazing. And then I met all these contemporary folks. And the history is very, very exciting. But I think the most exciting thing for me is the Grange now. What the Grange is and what the Grange can be. And the present and the future. So the history is very important, and in my writing I always give more of a history than that of it, because that's of course the foundation. But the Grange is just, it's such a really exciting, and they do such fabulous stuff. There's a lady in Fredonia Grange who says, and she just joined, she's an older lady, about 78, she joined about 1 or 2 years ago, and she said she could do all of the things the Grange does if she joined a lot of different organizations. But by belonging to the Grange, she can do all of those things with one organization. So they touch upon a lot of different things. So, and they are, some of the people from the Grange came to one of the classes. I had to teach a class a couple years ago, and some of the people came. And the people in my class were really awed, because the people in the Grange are very empowered. You know, they feel that they know that each one of them makes a difference. You know, maybe they don't pick up the red phone to Moscow, but each one of them within his or her own community can make a profound difference, and they do. Yes?
Jackie, the tapes and the interviews that you've done,
yes,
for this research,
yes,
do you have any plans for those tapes and or the interviews sharing with us?
I would love to find a nice place for them. So, this is Jeff Charlie, and I should have introduced to him as well. He is the lone person. I have four people on my dissertation committee, and Jeff is the one who made it out. Other people had conflicts of interest, but he did come. And he's the gentleman who, when I first started working on the Grange and wanted to do oral history, he is MSU's oral historian. And I went to him, and I didn't know what I was doing. Now I'm much more proficient at this, Jeff, right? He gave up hours and hours of his time and gave me a lot of encouragement. And even before other people on my, he wasn't on my committee then, actually, and people in my discipline were saying, the Grange? What is the Grange? You want to do this on the Grange? And he was very, very supportive. He's a seventh generation Michiganian, I think, and
eighth,
and has all kinds of farming people in his background, and just was so psyched about this and given me all kinds of, so at his behest I got, you know, the equipment and everything, and I've made the copies of the tape like you told me to, so I always have extra copies. So I have these tapes that I have transcribed, and yeah, I would be very happy if there were a good repository for them, because I have the complete transcriptions and I have the tapes, so at some point I'd love for them to have a nice home, you know, if somebody at MSU would like them.
Do you have any idea how many active Granges there are yet in Michigan?
I'm sure these folks, actually, I guess our head here would be able to. How many active Grangers?
As of right now, there's 48 Granges in the state of Michigan. They have a total membership of about 1,650 members.
Does it have a future?
Well, we're hoping so. Well, one of the things I think that Jackie had touched on briefly is with the Action Grange program, part of what we're looking at, and I'm sure we'll be getting our National Grange Convention is next week in Vermont. And I'm sure one of the major topics of discussion is this Action Grange program was set up to be a 3-year experiment as to what we need to do or look at some possibilities to prolong our, you know, to make sure that the organization does continue into the future. And with the 3-year period coming to a close, it's going to be time probably within the next year or two where we're going to have to analyze what some of these Action Granges have been doing and find ways that things that have worked in some cases and you know, be able to make those adaptions on a nationwide basis so that we can guarantee that we do exist into the future.
Does the Grange still have any kind of, what do you call it, a lobbying group in Washington?
Yes, we do. Our legislative, we do have the legislative department at the National Grange quite strongly. In the past 2 years, or in the past year actually, there's been two major issues at the Grange, the voice of the Grange in Washington. There were two major telecommunications companies that wanted to merge about a year and a half ago, and the National Grange legislative voice was one of the leaders in making sure that didn't happen. Jackie mentioned earlier, Oliver Hudson Kelly was the founder of the Grange. His farm is a historical site in the state of Minnesota. And due to some budget constraints in the state of Minnesota, they were discussing the possibility of closing that farm as a historical landmark. And through the grassroots legislation, the voice, the contacts from the local members, and some fundraising efforts, they've been able to keep that farm open. So there is still active participation on legislative fronts, and you know, again, probably at the national level and local level more than necessarily state issues. But I think the big key nowadays is what you can do in your local community to make the Granges that exist that are struggling with membership. We're urging them to take a look at the communities they're in, because we're not solely an agricultural farming-based organization anymore. You know, Joan is from Pittsfield Union Grange in Ann Arbor. I belong to a Grange that's in suburban Grand Rapids. So you look at Granges like hers and mine that are in urban areas, we're going to have a lot different community needs to serve in our communities than a home Grange or Ferroni Grange that's in a rural Calhoun County. So that's one of the things that we're working on, is to try and have a diversity of programs available so that regardless of the area the Grange is located in, there's some type of community projects that are available in that area.
We have both a community service book, right? Fredonia Grange got first place in community service. They have at the state convention every year, the Granges submit books on the community service they've done in the preceding year. And this year, Fredonia Grange got first prize. Home Grange got second. And Fredonia brought their book, and it's really, Mary Houghton put it together. It's very impressive to look through and see some of the activities that the Granges are involved in. They just are involved in so many different things. And you also brought some stuff to show people about the Grange, right? Did you bring anything? Were you guys able to bring anything? Yes.
First of all, Jackie, I'd like to mention something about our deaf awareness program. That's the health project for the Grange beginning at the state level. And since we were coming this far today, we decided to go on to Flint for the Michigan School for the Deaf Ed. And one of our programs there is, we call it our Adopt-A-Child program. We have about 30 children there who need extra support, extra attention, clothing, and so our local Granges will, in effect, adopt a child and provide Christmas gifts, cards, etc. throughout the year. And so today we went to the school for the deaf, Jeff and Ron and I, and we presented a resolution that was passed on behalf of their 150th anniversary, and presented the certificate and the resolution. And they were just so happy. It is just such an upper to go visit the school for the deaf because they so much appreciate the Granges that are participating in the Adopt a Child program. And so we'll have probably 30 plus this year. I think we may have a few extra kids. But anyway, that's extra. But that's something that's very exciting that's happening in the contemporary Grange. Anyway, what I brought to share is a book called The Grange Master and the Grange Lecturer, written by Jenny Buell in 1920. Jenny Buell was a member of the Grange her whole life, and she worked for the State Grange for about 50 years. She was secretary, and then she'd be lecturer, which is the program director, and then she would be secretary and lecturer.
Back and forth, yes.
For her whole life. She edited the Michigan Patron, which came after the Grange Visitor for quite a few years, but a brilliant lady. And in it, you know, we talk about being out in the community, and I agree with that. All Granges should be involved in their community. But in 1920, Jenny Buell wrote that very thing, that Granges should be out working in the community. She wrote something else that's a part of our ritual. And I just spotted this today, but it's really important because it is an important part of the Grange past, the Grange present, and I hope the Grange future, where it says, this is part of the program director's responsibility, that whatever you have in your programs should serve to develop a better and higher manhood and womanhood among ourselves. And I think in part that's what Jackie has talked about today, because Ron and I are, I hate to say the best example, but certainly one of the prime examples of kids growing up in the country, attending one-room country schools, shy, not wanting to be up talking in front of people, and Rollin became president of the State Grange, and I became a few things too. But I credit that to Helen Peck and the Grange. Because back when I was about 33 or 34 years old in a Pomona meeting, I don't know if I ever told you this, Jackie, Helen Peck stood up, hadn't talked to me at all. She said, I think we should run Buell Winter for Ceres up the State Grange. And I could have died. You know, what was I going to do? But our county did that. I was elected. Next, I was elected lecturer of the State Grange and a whole bunch.
The rest is history.
And I give Helen Peck all the credit for that. Vernon and Helen Peck were two of our the people that meant so much to us. And really, those two, plus Bill and Lenore Brake, are the reason that we are in this meeting today. Thank you, Jackie.
So did you bring anything?
I was brought some things that today's Grange, we will brought something from past Grange, brought something that we publish as a Grange in keeping we publish through our Deaf Awareness Program, we have posters that we publish that we offer free of charge to school children. Through our community service, we have a dictionary program that we're trying to get dictionaries into the hands free of charge to every third grader so that they can have something of their own and learn our language. We also, free of charge, Bueller, are these still available free of charge? These are posters that we would like to have hanging in a place where parents with small children are, where it's help to see the signs of a hearing loss to make sure that your child is hearing appropriate things at the appropriate age. So it's just some of the current publications that we as a Grange offer. This poster in the Grain was published by the National Grange. Since our State Grange through Beulah, as the awareness chairman, has taken over that responsibility and is continuing to have this poster printed. So we are getting the word out. We did notice us on the way in today to the library. There were yards keepers out here doing work with very loud machinery, and at first we didn't think that they had hearing protection on, but as we saw the there were little green hearing protection, so we were proud that
yes.
that some of that awareness is still around or it's being followed.
Okay, guys in the back, did you bring anything to do with the Grange that you wanted to show anybody? I mean, I know you didn't bring my prize, but did you bring anything else?
I didn't bring your prize,
no.
But I do want to follow up on what you mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Anybody that's interested in the Michigan State Grange website, it is at www.michigangrange.org. And we try and keep that as current as possible with different events going on at various granges around the state. Of course, it's only as current as the information that I'm fed from the local granges, so there's probably always more that could be out there. But we try and keep a current listing of events going on the calendar. And one of the things I'm hoping to add to the website, hopefully by the end of the year, is a page where you can, if you're interested in locating a grange somewhere near you, that you will be able to, I probably will list them by county, or I haven't all the specifics figured out yet, but if somebody's looking for grange information, to put them in contact with the grange that's closest to their area.
Okay. Yes, did you get deluged with emails when the website went down?
Yes.
We count on this website and it went down. Somebody hacked into the National Grange website that the State Grange feeds off of, and so I don't know exactly when it went down, but I was frantic. I was trying to get information, and yeah. Patty, did you bring anything?
No.
No. Okay. Joan? No.
She brought
you. Okay. Fredonia, I think that leaves you. Okay, you guys brought stuff. You brought stuff. Okay.
Carried it half a mile.
Well, you've got stuff, and I'm sure like some of the stuff you'd like to pass around, like the
I did.
The ballot box and stuff. So you should show some of the stuff, because I think people will.
We brought past, present. This is one of our women's activities, very active in quilting. We make lab robes for area nursing homes. We brought this a little sample of many they have made and donated. We also brought National Grange cookbooks, if anybody's interested in them. Jackie mentioned them. Recipes from grangers all throughout the United States.
And it also gives gives some history too with it. You learn a lot. I mean, there's a lot of, it's not just recipes, but it also gives, talks about the different granges,
yeah,
and gives you a lot of information, yeah.
They're on sale for $12 a piece, okay?
And you don't leave the room without buying one.
We brought implements which are used in the opening and closing ceremonies of the subordinate granges. Each one has a different meaning through the degree work and stuff. We brought Fredonia Grange has made some brochures, just little information of what we've been doing. Some of our projects throughout the years that have enabled us to get first place in community service. Of course, our big, thick community service book, Mary makes them bigger and bigger every year. Please look it over, though. Subordinate Grange Manual and the Digestible Laws, this is the 1987 version. Order of Patents and Husbandry. Gavel, I don't know if all of you have noticed the nice display that the library put up for the Grange out in the lobby, but they do have a lot of Grange memorabilia out there. This is Fredonia Grange's ballot box. Back in the old days, black balls and white balls. And this is, I don't know if anybody noticed, this is Helen Peck. She was probably 95 when this picture was taken, still playing the piano for our Grange. One thing nice about this, one of our newest members, the Jackie, Miss Dukavis, plays the piano just like Helen Peck. So when she's at our meetings, it makes my heart throb. It really does. We're a progressive Grange. I had to bring this picture. We have fun for going to Grange, okay? Two of our members. We just have a good time.
It's because one of them came and they were going to make a donation or something to Fredonia Grange. I think that's the, and so
you know, they never did, but that's okay.
But Jim Mahn was so excited about it that he went over and kissed the guy, so
yeah.
That's just the story I've heard.
We've also brought that's the copy of the Charter Members of Fredonia Grange.
Okay. This is my father. We are a Grange family, okay? This is one of the displays at the Calhoun County Fair that Fredonia Grange had put on. I don't know what year for sure that is.
It's gotta be in the 1930s.
But this is, and up till maybe a couple years ago, we did have a display of Floral Hall, which is a building at the Calhoun County Fairgrounds. We've kind of gotten out of that. This is a picture. I don't know why, I can't remember why we get these, but this is the way the Grange is set up for the regular meetings. All their officers have your graces here. Assistant stewards, a steward, the gatekeeper. So this is a big history right here.
That was issued to us for gaining membership.
Gaining membership was for membership. In my glass. Oh, yeah, 15% net gain in membership. 1989. And over behind Jackie, we have some staffs, which the stewards, assistant stewards, and the gatekeeper use in the opening and closing ceremony. They have the sickle, shepherd's crook, and the spud. They all represent and an owl for the gatekeeper. This is the spud, shepherd crook, which the lady assistant steward uses, and then the side of the sickle for the
not a side. Not a side.
Show the owl. And now, I know I'm going to embarrass the man, but I'd like my father to get up and do the opening for the installation of officers.
Now you did this beautifully before. You can do this.
There's a manual right up there for reference.
Don't let him drive us home.
You could do it. No, he can do this. He can do it.
Before I get started on doing that, and we'll take a little time, this is an owl that was made out of a Schumach limb. There is some painting in here, but all of the circles in the eyes are growth. Here's growth.
I didn't know that. Who did that?
I think Elman found it somewhere.
Elman. Okay. See, you come to this, you learn things.
Now I'll get into it is the opening of the installation of officers that is given. Since God placed man on earth, agriculture has existed. There is no occupation that precedes it. There is no order or association that ranks with the tillers of the soil. Before literature existed, before governments were known, agriculture was the calling of man, and all the fruits of social progress since then grew from the ground soil. Agriculture toilers therefore claim this precedent over royal dynasties and titles of nobility, that they represent the oldest and most indisputable lineage and hold a patent that issues from the ancient gates of Eden. The Order of Patrons of Husbandry is the only association whose teachings accompany its members in their daily pursuits. They form a part of the farmer's life. They do not call him from his labors to place his mind upon any other subject, but furnish recreation in his daily duties and, by cheerful instruction, lighten and elevate his labors. These teachings are the loftiest that man can seek. Nor does our order interfere with his religious or political opinions, but in morality seeks the highest standard. Honesty is inculcated, education nurtured, temperance supported, brotherly love cultivated, and charity made an essential characteristic. Thus, our order binds us together in fraternity, and by encouraging education, will advance to a higher state of perfection the science of agriculture. We encourage the planting of trees, fruits, and flowers by which to enhance the value and increase the attractions of our home. adorning them with those beauties so lavishly given to us by the God of nature. There is no calling more elevating to the mind than agriculture, viewed as presented in our order. God in the beginning made it honorable, and it is our duty to sustain it as such. Discarding the principles which exclude the woman from the knowledge of the mysteries, we open wide our doors and bid her welcome. In so doing, we claim a high precedent, for God said, it is not good for man to be alone. Thus, ours is truly a social order, one in which all can find something to enjoy. And we believe there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and make his soul enjoy good in his labors. It is from the hand of God. We ask none to join us who cannot find good in his fellow beings, but to all interested in agriculture, with generous hearts and open hands, to help the needy, raise the fallen, and aid in making labors and aid in making his labors cheerful, we say, welcome to the Grange. And that is the opening.
I guess that's it. But as I said, we have some things up here if you want to look at anything. Or thank you so much. Yes. Oh, wait, wait. We have somebody who has volunteered to do the closing by heart.
Well, this is something that you hear. It's in the ritual, the closing of the Grange, at the close of every Grange meeting. It's not long, but so, brothers and sisters, as we're going to separate and mingle with the world, let's not forget the precepts of our order. Let us have dignity to labor in our dealings with our fellow men, be honest, be just, and fear not. We must avoid intemperance in eating, drinking, and language, also in work and recreation, and whatever we do, strive to do well. Let us be quiet, peaceful citizens, feeding the hungry, helping the fatherless and widows, and keeping ourselves unspotted from the world. That's it.